The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
You're listening to The Pulse on CFRO 100.5 FM, Vancouver Co-op Radio. I'm David Ball. You can find all of our previous shows and interviews at thepulse.coopradio.org or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Well, on Saturday, drug users and their supporters will be marching to remember all of those who have died in record numbers during the COVID crisis, with numbers set never before seen in the history of the province in both June and May. Now July, seeing the highest number of overdose calls in history, according to BC Paramedic. That's led to VANDU, the Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users, and BC Association of People on Opioid Maintenance, to organize a march titled, We Speak Their Names, We March With Rage. We're talking to two leaders of BC APOM today, Vice President Raya Jean and President Laura Shaver, who's been a guest on our program before. The march is at noon, starting at Main and Hastings, and will end at a location they have not yet disclosed, but they encourage people to bring masks if you're from outside the downtown east side, and anyone who wants one will be provided a mask upon arrival at Main and Hastings. Here's Raya Jean and Laura Shaver. Thank you so much, Raya and Laura, for being on The Pulse today here on Vancouver Co-op Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
First of all, Raya, if we could start with you, how was the meeting about the march on Saturday, and what are you looking forward to about it?
I am a relatively newer vice president on the board of BCAPOM, and so this is my first planning meeting that I've attended for a march like this, and it sounds like it's going to be, pretty nice and simple. Just looking forward to getting together with some folks in the community, because especially, since COVID, there hasn't been a lot of opportunity for that.
Now, of course, Laura, I suppose the most important turnout is on Saturday. That people show up then. Tell us about what they can expect.
So we've got a short program. So we're going to start at Main and Hastings, where we're going to do a little bit of a program. Then we have like a little bit of a march route down Carroll, and then I think up Cordova. I'm not going to tell you where we're going to be ending because it's a surprise.
Okay.
But you know what? I'm actually really excited. It's been a while since I've, been on a good action or a march or, out somewhere stopping the traffic. I'm usually in the office more now or in a courtroom or something like that. So I'm excited for people to know that, VANDU is up and running again. That BCAPOM and WARS, and the Illicit Drinkers Group are all have their meetings at full capacity again. And that, the thing is that we lost so many people during COVID that it's sad that we have to have a mass memorial.
I watched the memorial for Thomas last week, and we carried it on the station here, and you could see that people were so emotional about him, but also about not being able to grieve all of the people.
Well, and the way that he died is, people don't understand that the frontline workers do it voluntarily. They do it for the people that are the people that most people try to forget about. And sometimes people don't understand the difficult work that comes with it. You can only take so many deaths before it really, really starts to affect you.
Tell me a bit about the theme of the march this year and what you're trying to get across with it.
These deaths, most of them they were preventable.
The deaths were preventable,
which means they were ODs, or else they were deaths because of not good health care. You know what I mean? Like wrong. They should have been. I don't know. I guess it's being poor and marginalized. The health care and people's health are so much different than, somebody who is eating every day, three meals a day, or has a warm place to sleep every night with that's clean and stuff. And the thing is that it goes to show how many people there are, that are either suffering from, you know, mental illness, or are consumers of drugs, or are poor, and you know, this is the life that we live. And the thing is that the government is the ones that are responsible for these deaths. Because first of all, you know, many of them were because of the change from the methadone to methadose, and then of course the tainted drug supply, and the fact that sure safe supply, but what safe supply by their terms? So safe supply is not somebody who's smoking lungs does not want to take a pill, or somebody who is addicted to opiates or consumer of opiates needs to have a choice of what health care or what prescription medication they're allowed to take, or what works best for them.
Right. So under the COVID safe supply guidelines, I understood that it's only pharmaceutical equivalents like Dilaudid and that kind of thing.
Well, that's the thing, though, is that they are giving injectable morphine, and, you know, they give you the Dilaudid that are injectable, but they're actually not giving, like, liquid injectable Dilaudid.
Yeah, it's a pill that can be crushed.
Right, so you have to cook it yourself.
Yeah, and there's different forms of it, like generics, and some of them are more easily dissolved than others. And so, it's because, you know, they're not formulated for that originally.
And that's part of the thing. There's also, you know, not only that with the safe supply, what after people are, you know, not hustling all day long for the drugs, then what do they do then? You know, what kind of a plan is there for people? You know, I was just reading the poster because I forgot what the, you know, it says, we speak their names, we march with rage. And the one thing I learned when, you know, working with one of my coworkers here at Van Dew is that I've turned my rage into activism. So, you know, we speak their names, we march with rage, is because most of them died for no reason. They don't need to be, they shouldn't have died. They had the proper health care or the safe supply that they wanted, then they would most likely all still be here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the difference for me comes down to privilege, really. Born with what privilege and what kind of health care that kind of privilege can give you access to versus not. So I think, you know, someone like myself who has, you know, more privilege than others, you know, who sort of grew up like, I don't know, mid, lower class and, you know, white and et cetera, I probably, you know, before in my life, would have taken it for granted the fact that I get treated a certain way by healthcare providers. And it wasn't until I ended up, you know, at a methadone clinic, to get a Suboxone prescription. And this is one of those private clinics that I really started to notice the difference between how I was treated and how others in my clinic were treated, mm-hmm. right? And that sort of tipped me off. And then I started noticing it everywhere, mm-hmm. right? And that's kind of how I ended up here mm-hmm. in this group, was because I guess maybe people who look like me don't tend to get together with other people on methadone or Suboxone and talk about it, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's really what I was noticing. And I just noticed so many just shocking ways that people are treated in that system that I otherwise wouldn't have known about.
Right. It's sort of like that. If you don't know, now you know.
Yes. Yes. Now you know that, you know, like, you know, one of the clinics I was at, you know, like everybody's sort of, you know, there's no privacy, right? They'll just kind of, you know, shout out your name and your details of your, you know, your OAT, and then also, you know, you have to go and give a urine sample, and the bathroom is right there, and it's in front of everyone, and, you know, they're forcing people who are in wheelchairs to, you know, give a specimen who can barely get out of their wheelchair, and the washroom is not accessible. I mean, these are real issues, right? I mean, it was shocking to me at first, and I felt like, you know, I have to get involved in some way, because this has to be a better system for people, right? This has to be a humane system for people.
Today is Cherise Piat's birthday. Today would be her birthday.
And she passed, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. And I think everyone remembers her and is inspired. Like, I know that people, a lot of people are using because of trauma. This must be just more trauma.
Well, that's the truth. The thing is, you know, I don't know. I don't get really angry very often, but when I think about Cherise and I think about, you know, the needless deaths, I have no, I can't help but to just want to fucking snap. I just want to lash out because it's just, you know, how many more people have to die? This is just going on way, way, way too long.
Yeah.
Way more people than the COVID has taken or will take have died in the fentanyl overdose crisis. And, you know, the month we just had was the worst overdose deaths we've had so far.
How do you handle your anger? Because I think a lot of people listening might feel the same thing. How do you cope? Because it's quite a confusing emotion.
How do I cope? Yeah. I run the APOM meetings. I make sure that when I'm going to help somebody to get onto safe supply or to help them to make a complaint, that I know what I'm talking about, so that when those doctors try to, you know, put them down or make them tell them, you know, oh, we can't do this, that I can actually say, well, actually, that's not true. Because of being treated that way, I've made it my job to research, mm-hmm. to be up on, you know, being able to lead people and to help them into having fair health care because of how people are treated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And instead of getting mad like I used to and ending myself up in jail, I come to work and I work on my computer. And I think about the things that need to be done and to make sure that, you know, what doctor's appointment I'm going to with somebody that day, that I know exactly what I'm going to need to say in there to make sure that they get what they want. Mm. Even though it's just a hustle, it's just a different hustle.
Yeah, and I would say for me too, it's like if I have an emotion that's very difficult to process, and it's so difficult that I don't even know there's a way to process it, right? Because a lot of the times we're not taught anything about our feelings, right? And so, yeah, they do often say, you know, anger is one of the more safe feelings. However, for me, you know, I think I'm the type of person that, like if I have a problem or if I see something that's unfair and unjust, you know, I'll try to find other people who are also dealing with that issue, right? I'll be looking for, and suddenly I'll see it everywhere. You know what I mean? It's like you look for it and then it's there in terms of, you know, where the gaps are. And so I think, you know, and then you're working with other people and it really is creative work. You know, it's like, you know, I think before I would have thought, you know, creativity, being an artist or whatever is mostly about visual art or something or writing, you know, but, you know, activism is a creative expression as well, right? And, you know, for me, I find it very, very healing. Hopefully the march on Saturday will, you know, get some more people out.
I wanted to read this definition of rage from Psychology Today magazine, because it totally fits with what we're talking about. Rage is a potent form of anger created to fend off a serious threat to one's sense of personal safety, whether that threat is mental, emotional, or physical. And it seems to me that's what the drug user community is saying here, that there is a threat to survival.
Yeah. Big time.
It's about protecting the community. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it fits. I think we don't always know what it is that we're trying to process, though, right? And it's like, but it really is, you know, it literally is survival in this case, you know, like people are dying, completely preventable deaths, and people are using alone in shame, you know,
because somebody puts them there. That's one thing that changed when I moved to Vancouver. I thought I was moving here, that I would die here. and not come alive here. But the thing is that because I was taught that, I lost my guilt and I lost my shame, so my use changed.
Mm-hmm.
And that made my drug use a lot less, because it wasn't a chase
yeah.
anymore. Instead,
yeah.
it was a form of like relaxation, not so much a need, but a want.
Yes.
And with you know, when you have a different outlook on things, it changes your whole how you look, how you eat, how you
yes.
live, how you dress, how you speak. You know, and that's the thing, is that the war on the poor and the war on drugs is put people exactly into their deathbeds, because it makes them hide and be on their own, because they feel like, you know, what doing is shameful. When, you know, the thing is that, to tell you the truth, I think some of the most kind-hearted and smartest and best people I've ever met are people that are so deep into an addiction or a consuming of drugs, it's not even funny, as opposed to somebody who is a Sunday church goer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the thing, is that the drug doesn't make the person makes the person.
Yes.
Before anybody was a drug user or they were poor, they have a name.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that bothers me, is that when people look at people, or, you know, they don't think about what's your name, it's what drug do you use?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And there's this sort of weird separation between people who think that, you know, substance abuse is a disease versus, you know, other mental health conditions or whatever. You know, I mean, for me, I look at substance use as an attempt to change how I feel, right? And that feeling might be a negative feeling, or it might also be a positive feeling. But either way, like, I'm looking to alter something. And when I was using drugs, which I'm not currently, I was just like completely living in shame and secrecy, you know, like I couldn't be a person in the world. Right. And, you know, activism has really changed that for me, because like, I don't have to be afraid anymore. Right. And Laura's right. Like it makes you feel so much lighter. Right. So it is like a way to build community with others and to channel those feelings into something productive, which feels really good. And, you know, for a lot of us, we never had that outlet before, or it wasn't socially acceptable or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I was just about to ask you about that. So thank you for answering my question about why activism has changed your life for the better. And of course, listeners can get involved, right? There's lots of organizations that meet in the VANDU building. There's VANDU has its meetings. There's BCA POM. There's WARS for Indigenous folks. There's the alcohol group.
There's the Juju Education. Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot. And not only that, there's also, you know, you can come in and volunteer and,
mm-hmm.
you know, work in our overdose prevention site, or just work at our front desk giving out harm reduction supplies, or, you know, there's lots of different things. And there's a lot of different other organizations in the downtown east side as well, or around Vancouver or other parts of the, you know, the province that people can get involved in.
Is there any news, Laura, on your lawsuit against Purdue Pharma that made the methadose? The last time we had you on our show, Laura, about 2 months ago, you talked about it.
Not yet, no.
Still going ahead, though?
Oh, yo, you betcha.
It seems like there's so much going on every time I go to the VANDU building.
Oh, you bet. I'm excited about the lawsuit, just because I like the fact that people are going to be able to see that after all this time, you know, we were talking about this stuff years ago, and now it's just coming. Now they're just actually getting proper proof to be able to, you know, do something about it. And that's the thing, is
yeah.
that, you know what, you people forget that before people were drug users or before they were activists, that they were people that have and they still do have full-time jobs, run families,
yes.
you know, do all these different things. And you know, the thing is that they just, it wasn't our job to investigate, but we did. And because of that, we, you know, it's not, I'm not, I don't think I'm worried about will we win. It'll be like, how much are we going to win?
Yeah, exactly. And the annoying part, though, of course, is that, you know, like, it takes so much proof, so much evidence before people will listen, because people don't listen to people who are poor, to people who use drugs, right? It's like, I mean, that's, you know, like, I was one of those people before that was working myself into the ground and using a lot just to cope with that. But you wouldn't have known from looking at me, probably. And I could not be open about it because I was afraid of being stigmatized.
What can people expect on Saturday? Should people wear masks? Are people going to be distanced? Like, how is that going to work for safety?
You know what? People can do what makes them feel safe. And yes, you will have masks if people don't have them. And if people, you know, the best thing is to do is to probably to wear masks. I think you'll notice that the downtown east side is the place where you will see the least masks. And I think it's because people are, I guess it seems like we haven't been touched very hard with COVID, as in like COVID being an outbreak in the downtown east side so far. So I think, but I think the best thing is, you know, it's best to stay, you know, do your social distancing and wear a mask. Yeah.
And for people who are allies from outside the community, it's probably more important not to bring it in.
Well, you betcha.
Yeah, exactly. And so if you are an ally and you're coming into the community, or you're curious about Vandu and BCA Palm, and, you know, you want to get involved, you know, wearing a mask can be an expression of love and caring for others, right? And that's awesome. And so really, you know, by doing that, you are demonstrating that, you know, you respect the community and that, you know, you care about them.
Well, thank you so much both for your time, and great to have you on. I hope you come on again.
You're welcome. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
And that was Laura Shaver and Raya Jean, President and Vice President of the BC Association of People on Opiate Maintenance. Their march, We Speak Their Names, We March With Rage, will start at Main and Hastings Street in the downtown east side at noon on Saturday.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.